My name is Gina Mangan. I'm one of the past presidents of this fabulous society, the Society of Dermatology Physician Associates, and I'm currently a nomination committee member. So thanks for being here this afternoon. I have the pleasure of introducing Dr. Markowitz. She's a leading dermatologist, skin cancer specialist, and CEO and founder of Markowitz Medical. She has been called a dermatologic pioneer for her groundbreaking work developing minimally invasive diagnostic and treatment protocols for skin cancer. Her motto is, you guys, I love this motto, cutting edge without the cutting. So please welcome to the podium, Dr. Markowitz.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. So we have a lot to cover in a very short period of time. So I'm going to probably be moving rapidly through some of this information. But obviously, dermoscopy, when we talk about non-invasive imaging, is the key to diagnosis. And so back in the 80s, we had the ABCDEs of melanoma. And I'm going to argue that we've evolved with dermoscopy and other non-invasive tools. And this is just an example of some of the dermatoscopes now that we have available that have both polarized and non-polarized lighting, contact and non-contact. And this is the kind of melanoma, and this is, I believe, a 0.2 or 0.1 millimeter thick melanoma on an individual which clearly doesn't have the ABCDEs because we've evolved. We've evolved. We're into E now, and dermoscopy is what makes us the experts and not our patients bringing in the skin cancers for us to then, you know, say, oh yeah, that's probably a melanoma, or God forbid saying, no, I think that's fine because it's such a subtle lesion. But dermoscopy looking at gray dots granules allows us to remain the experts and our patients to feel comfortable in our hands, not to mention saving lives. And so that's this patient's melanoma, and I have way too many examples, so I'll try not to share all of them. And what we really don't want to be the ones doing is trying to figure things out that are across the room diagnosis. I actually find dermoscopy to be less helpful. So if it's really obvious and it's this like weeping, bleeding lesion and the patient's coming in and you're like, oh my God, that's probably a melanoma, dermoscopy might actually make it more confusing. So dermoscopy is here to help guide us when, you know, a patient walks in with what looks like two pimples and the one up top has gray dots granules and arborized vessels and blue ovoid nests, and you say, that's not a pimple, that's your basal cell. But the one on the bottom, you're like, let's leave the sebaceous hyperplasia alone. And so what, there are many approaches to dermoscopy. I wrote a color wheel textbook approach, which next year, I'm finally going to do the second edition. This is just an approach of, do I cut it, yes or no? Is this bad? Is it not bad? Because ultimately, I don't want to cut patients unless I have to, and I want to try to catch things as early as possible. And so I have little pearls, like, first of all, never look dermoscopically at a patient unless you're looking at them clinically. And so if something is elevated clinically and it's really pale brown in color, but it happens to have only brown color dermoscopically, let's not even think about the pattern. We know it's benign, leave it alone. And so when we take everything under the context of what we see both clinically and dermoscopically, we know a lot more than we give ourselves credit for. And then if we look at something that's flat and pink, we might think, well, that can't be too bad. But actually, there's a ton of malignancies that fall in that category. And so it's important to just remember what we're looking at clinically and then what we see dermoscopically and what colors are we focused on. And then we can look at various patterns and be able to diagnose our patients and, of course, save lives. And so when does pattern matter? When we're trying to differentiate, for example, something that's pink that's irritated compared to an early basal cell. And so our basal cell is going to have the arborized vessels, pink, white, shiny, or scar-like. And our, you know, lichen planus, like keratosis, is not going to have any of those features. It's just going to look inflamed. And then when we're thinking about dermoscopy equipment in the past, we didn't have polarized lighting. Now we do. In the past, we didn't have smaller equipment. Now we do. So this is a bit archaic sometimes to think about. But it is important because most of the dermatoscopes that you're going to be purchasing have both polarized and non-polarized lighting. And it's important to remember that sometimes you want to toggle between both because, for example, contact non-polarized dermoscopy, you're going to be seeing milia-like cysts a little bit better. And then with polarized lighting, you're going to be able to see, let's say, ridge pattern a little bit better for seborrheic keratoses. Regression is much better with non-polarized lighting. So when you're using your dermatoscope, it's usually in the polarized mode, and then you want to make sure that if you're like, wait, I'm not sure if this is an early melanoma, does it really have blue-gray, you have to remember to toggle back to the non-polarized mode because you're going to see it a lot better. And so we don't always think to do that. We just kind of leave it the way, when we turn it on in polarized lighting. Where is polarized lighting key? Before we had it, we never were able to look at vascular patterns. Now we can actually see vascular patterns with polarized dermoscopy. And so we can see, for example, red dots more prominently in this dermatofibroma. We weren't able to see crystalline or scar-like patterns, which are also very common in dermatofibromas, and now we can because of polarized dermoscopy. Where doesn't it matter? It doesn't matter when we're looking at network, and this is an example of a sole of a foot. And so you're in a junctional nevus, and it doesn't matter whether it's polarized or non-polarized. So again, one of the dermoscopy companies even has like a little handout to show here's what you see better polarized, here's what you see better non-polarized. Ultimately, it's just to remember that if you're not sure, remember to toggle because you do see different patterns in different polarized versus non-polarized. In the past, they used to say with polarized dermoscopy, you don't need a medium. And also that it's so important to think about them separately. I think about them combined. Try to get a dermatoscope that has both modalities. Because if, I'm having a wonderful day and this is the patient that comes in, often hoping for that, I don't need a medium because, look, we've got plenty of oil on the patient. I'm going to be able to see any of the moles or lesions that I'm looking at. But most of my patients don't come in this way. And so it's important that we use a medium. You can use oil, and I think people mostly do oil-based. Up north, I'm in New York, my patients would be very upset if I applied oil all over their skin, so I use alcohol. In Europe, they often using glycerin. What you cannot use is water. Water is not a good enough medium. And when you're looking at nails or structures like this, sometimes Purell or something a little bit thicker is just more helpful with dermoscopy. So let's jump to melanocytic dermoscopy because that's how we're going to diagnose our melanomas, but also our benign moles. And so even though I'm a color wheel approach, pattern is still important to know some basic patterns. So you have dot globular or cobblestone, which often you'll see in congenital nevi. You have the reticular pattern, which is on our more superficial nevi, and then you have homogeneous. And so if we look at reticular patterns, something to remember is what does the periphery of this look like? Because sometimes things in the middle can get a little interesting, but if the periphery looks pretty benign, you're dealing with a benign lesion. Like, for example, if you have hairs coming out, you're going to have some perifollicular hypopigmentation, and you might say, is this symmetric? Is it not symmetric? And so a reticular pattern doesn't have to be completely symmetric, but again, you're dealing with one color, everything looks nice and regular. And so here are just some examples of reticular pattern moles. And you can see not all of them look as symmetric, but it, ultimately the periphery looks nice and uniform, and it's not dark or streaked. And dot globular is mentioned often as that beautiful cobblestone street in Europe. And these are congenital nevi, or sometimes they're a straight dot globular pattern, and they're so pretty when they're benign. And here are some examples, and I used the one in the middle on purpose because everyone panics, oh look, there's blue and there's all sorts of colors, but it's overall symmetric. And then we have to remember if the patient makes a lot of these darker moles, that's okay too. So those are benign. And then we get to homogeneous pattern, and these can be a little confusing, but these are also our blue nevi. And sometimes people say, oh, there's like white streaking, and there's the, you know, blue, is that regression? Is that a nodular melanoma? And so when it's homogeneous, it's not a malignancy, it's benign and it's uniform, and it doesn't have to be perfectly uniform. And here's another example of a blue nevus as well, very classic homogeneous pattern for this patient. And this one is an intradermal nevus. And then just to remember that often things will look like their neighbors, and malignancies, especially when they're nodular or elevated or deep, that we're talking about an aggressive nodular melanoma. So that's gonna have to look pretty ugly. We're not talking about a flat lesion. So we have to remember, what are we looking at clinically also? And so even though this is an elevated lesion, look how uniform it is. We know this is not a deadly nodular melanoma for this patient. It's an intradermal nevus. And then here's another example. And then finally, I like to use this example for intradermal nevus. This is, you know, not obviously a dark lesion, but it wobbles. So sometimes when you have combined lesions where it's intradermal, but maybe it's junctional, and then people start to get confused, or maybe it's even, you know, a little atypical looking, and then there's the center, but the center nicely wobbles. Well, malignancies don't wobble, right? So that's the wobble sign. And I got to meet the physician from Switzerland that came up with the wobble sign. He's very proud of it. Malignant patterns, you have definitely crossover with malignant patterns, but really you're just looking for things that are more asymmetric, have more colors, have more interesting things happening. And with reticular network, especially because these can be pretty subtle, when you're starting to see some streaking or darkening at the periphery, not the center of a lesion, that's really concerning for melanoma. And that's an example of an early melanoma with that disorganized. And here's a few. These are all early lesions because that's the majority of what I'm biopsying. So, but even in the earliest lesions, you're gonna see these patterns, and you're gonna be able to catch them early, and your patients are gonna be very grateful. And then here we have the dot globular malignant patterns. And these also will have asymmetry and variety of different colors. And so here are, again, very early lesions, all dot globular pattern, but look how asymmetric. Look, it's like kind of at the edge of a lesion. It's standing out. It's not uniform throughout. Some of them have a variety of colors, darkening. So those are all signs that these are malignant. And then with homogeneous pattern, when it's asymmetric, when there's a variety of colors where you can't even place it in a pattern, that's gonna be also your melanoma. And then when you have a pediatrician coming to see you for a rash and they end up with this lesion on the chest and you say, oh my goodness, this has like every single pattern of melanoma, but still a melanoma in situ, but you've got the asymmetric dot globular. And this was early in my career when he came in with this lesion. And then you've got sort of like that, you know, homogeneous asymmetric, and then you've got this random reticular thing happening, and you're like, let's biopsy the melanoma. And yes, we'll treat the rash also. And so here's another example where you have, you know, this kind of asymmetry dot globular and asymmetric homogeneous, and these are all early melanomas, but very irregular, very asymmetric, and even reticular over there. And then malignant features. So we have disorganized patterns. We have blue-gray dots, granules. If it's a deeper, more aggressive lesion, we have a blue-white veil. Those are, you know, you definitely want to get those right. You have the focal pseudopods or radial streaming or just that kind of, you know, streaking at the edge of a lesion. And polymorphous dotted vessels, which I would argue are probably the hardest thing, is to try to understand things based on their vascularity. So we're doing okay. So blue-gray dots, granules, often you'll see that, like I mentioned, in the flatter lesions, where you'll see that gray, and then you'll see the asymmetry. So you have to think melanoma. And these are going to be in your early melanomas, so that's good. And so here's some examples of early melanomas with that regression pattern. And then the blue-white veil is going to be your aggressive, nodular, probably an across the room diagnosis, but sometimes they're really small, and then you look up close and you're like, wow, this is like black and asymmetric, and you know, this one is an aggressive late stage nodular melanoma, so you probably, you know, the dermoscopy even can be a bit confusing when it's an across the room diagnosis. Whereas here's an early nodular melanoma in the making on a young gentleman who said, yeah, I've had this lesion for about a month, Dr. Markowitz, and I'm like, well, you usually come to see me every 3 months, but you should know better that when you see a new dark spot, come even sooner. And already that lesion had a blue-white veil and asymmetry and what would call a negative network. So that's still a very early lesion, 0.37 millimeter thick melanoma, but you know that that's the direction it was going in, that nodular melanoma already had that blue-white veil. And then focal pseudopods or radial streaming. So you look at the edge of a lesion and you start to see these like kind of fingers and streaking and asymmetry. Those are also going to be with your with early melanomas. And then polymorphous and dotted vessels. These are, you know, when you see something like this, I'll say, I didn't even think that was a melanoma. When I biopsied it, I thought maybe it's a squamous cell. And then, of course, with hindsight, I said, oh, yes, it's polymorphous dotted. This is a diagnosis, like you see an irregular vascular pattern and a pink lesion, you better think nodular melanoma and the differential, and you better make sure you biopsy it. But you would biopsy it anyway. Maybe you'd think it was a squamous cell. What you wouldn't do is leave it behind. But the goal is to catch it at this stage, right? Because that patient is your patient for life. So here's a pink little tiny macule. Like, who would ever think that's harmful? And these are all more than melanoma in situs. Yes, they're less than a, I believe all of them were less than a millimeter in thickness, but they're still all amelanotic melanomas. And so what is an amelanotic melanoma early, which is when you want to catch it, not when it's like these polymorphous undulating, you know, papule vessels. You want to catch them when they're flat and pink, and then you look up close and you're like, there's like these kind of unusual dotted vessels and then this random pigment that doesn't really follow any pattern. You better take that off, because amelanotic melanomas are the most aggressive, most rapidly growing, and probably the easiest to miss. And so they are the reason why I came up with a color wheel approach, because pink and brown is very bad, especially if there's no symmetry to it. So here's a gentleman with lots of large atypical moles on the trunk, and this is the lesion that was biopsied, and that's his tiny little melanoma. But why do we know that? Because of dermoscopy, because there's these random dots and then like kind of pigment that doesn't belong, and that's an amelanotic melanoma, and I believe less than a millimeter thick, which is exactly where you want to catch amelanotics. So now let's take a look at non-melanocytic benign dermoscopy, because we've looked at all the melanocytic, and here I feel like this is the differential seborrheic keratoses. When you look at the ABCDEs of melanoma, or you have you know, people referring outside of the dermatology profession with lesions of concerns, the majority are seb case. And so it's important to be, you know, obviously very comfortable diagnosing seb case and saying, oh, it's fine. So they're sharply demarcated borders, they have milia-like cysts and comedial-like openings and fissures and ridges and looped or hair-pulling vessels. And if they're very irritated, they have these vessels surrounded by a halo. But you start to get used to the pattern. I like to think, instead of brain, I like to think of coral. So I use coral-like pattern, ridges and fissures. And these are the ridges, and these are the fissures, and these are our seborrheic keratoses. And finger-like projections. So when you see like the early coral and they look like these finger-like projections, you start to get used to looking at this and saying, this is benign, this is a seborrheic keratosis, here's the ridges. And then the fissures are just the indentation, so the areas that are, you know, part of the coral as well. And then when you look at the pathology, you see the ridges and the fissures, and it all sort of, you know, fits together in these keratin-filled clefts. And so here's another example, seborrheic keratosis, and you start to see the coral, and it starts to become very familiar. And so when you're looking at very early lesions, you don't want to start driving yourself crazy, oh, everything's an early melanoma. No, this is melanocytic, and there's some keratin plugs, and that's okay too. And then sharply demarcated borders, usually more advanced seborrheic keratoses, again, benign. And so you see the sharply demarcated border and all of the other features of seb K as well, and like milia-like cysts and often keratin plugs. And so that's our, you know, keratin-filled cysts. And when they're open to the surface, they're darker, or keratin plugs, and when they're closed, they're like closed comedones. That's why we say comedo-like, and they're white. And so it's kind of like acne, but not to confuse things. So this is a seborrheic keratosis, and you have the milia-like cysts or stars in the sky, and those are not open to the surface, and they're white in color. And then those are the comedo-like openings, right? And keratin-filled plugs, or the plugs of keratin, which in this seb-K you can see quite easily. Sometimes it's not as obvious, so it starts to become familiar. You want to keep looking and seeing here are milia-like cysts and comedo-like openings, and okay, this is seb-K, I'm not going to panic. Because when you get these patients and you look at them clinically, to me, this looks kind of similar, right? But this lesion has granularity, no features of seb, better take it off. That's our melanoma. And then this lesion has our comedo-like openings and sharp borders, and okay, so it's a dark seborrheic keratosis, so what? So that's benign, pigmented seb-K. Maybe the patient wants it off, that's okay. So that's why we have now teaching slides of benign things. And sometimes, you know, you want to think of that you're, we always think, oh, well, oh, cool, that's really challenging. But remember, that melanoma, that's flat, and that seb-K, that's elevated. So take it back also to what we see clinically, and we think, wait, that's flat, so it can't really be a seb, and oh, yeah, and it has blue-gray, and it's asymmetric, that's a melanoma. Because in essence, you're like comparing apples and oranges, and we forget that when we're doing dermoscopy, always bring it back to what we see clinically. And then these are our dirty socks or solar lentigos. And they also have fingerprint-like patterns. Sometimes they'll look a little homogeneous, sometimes they look a little reticular, but they have like what a little moth came and took little bites. And so these are pretty classic too, and that's the fingerprint pattern, right? The fine lines running in parallel or linear fragments or broken lines. And those are lentigos or fingerprinting. And that's important because when we start to look at early lesions, sometimes it's hard to differentiate. So we have to remember what we see as benign and fingerprint and maybe some, you know, moth-eaten borders and so forth. And then when you have structureless, light brown, that's benign, but yes, it's also part of the non-melanocytic category or lentigo, with structureless area, diffuse light brown, so one of the patterns. And then the moth-eaten borders or the sharply demarcated borders are characteristic for all of these benign melanocytic, you know, whether it's lentigo or sometimes you'll even see it in a seborrheic keratosis. And here again, moth-eaten border, benign, moth-eaten borders. And then, oh, sorry, we'll go back for a second. So this is a reticular pattern. It looks a lot like a junctional nevus. So people say, oh, is this a junctional nevus? Is it a lentigo? It's something we're not going to biopsy or freak out about. But yes, they can look pretty similar. And it's nice to know when something is melanocytic or non-melanocytic, but with reticular pattern, it's sometimes hard to tell. And so what? I mean, we need to ultimately know, is this dangerous or am I leaving it behind? And so these are just some examples of the non-melanocytic reticular pattern. And then the most confusing is the lichen planus-like keratoses, because these are benign, but they're inflamed. And truthfully, most of my patients want them off because they're so irritated anyway. But it's nice to be able to see the pattern and say to the patient, I believe this is benign, but if you want it off, we'll take it off, and not to feel obligated, because I see the moth-eaten border. And, you know, I see that there's other benign features. But if I'm not sure and I see, you know, gray dots granules or other features of malignancy, and I know that it's probably irritated and it's probably an LPLK, this is something that often is going to get biopsied because you don't want to miss a melanoma. But it's still important to know that when things are inflamed or irritated, they start to mimic the structures that we see in not benign things. And here we have, again, an example of lichen planus-like keratosis, and you see that sort of pigmentation, but you're going to end up biopsying that lesion, and yet it's still benign. And then you have this lesion here, and you think, well, what is this? Well, it's got moth-eaten borders, and it has ridges, and it has, you know, all the features of a Seb-K, and then it's got these kind of dotted vessels, and then you start to drive yourself crazy, but you remember, this has substance. This is not flat, and it's got scale, and it's got ridges, and so LPLKs, they look like this. But if you're not sure, again, these are the lesions that the patients find the most irritating. They're going to be happy for you to biopsy them. And then, of course, dermatofibromas are palpable and they're scar-like, and so they're often a clinical diagnosis, but it's nice to know that it has all of these patterns, and the most important pattern here is that around the periphery is a pseudo-network. It's not a network, and it's faint, and it's normal, and it's healthy-looking, so sometimes the center can look a little interesting because it gets scar-like and it has vessels, but it's palpable, so the differential is an aggressive nodular melanoma, and you know it's not that because you're looking at the periphery of the lesion and it's a pseudo network and it's pretty uniform, and you're like, this is not an aggressive nodular melanoma. So we always think clinical too. What are we seeing? And then you have the central white patch, that's the scar pattern, and you have the vessels and erythema. And then sometimes you get globular-like structures. I mean, there's articles and articles about all the features of dermatofibromas because there are so many features, including crystalline-like structure. But again, remember, elevated nodular, is this an aggressive nodular melanoma? And you look at the periphery and it's a nice faint pseudo-network and you're like, yeah, this is not a malignancy. Clear cell acanthoma is just really fun diagnosis when you know dermoscopy. It's always nice to biopsy something and say, this is a clear cell acanthoma, and your pathologist very much respects you when you do that. And sometimes patients want these off. Sometimes you're not 100% sure that it's following this, what we call string of pearls. And so when you're not sure, the differential is a squamous cell, but it does have that beautiful pattern, and you know it's probably a clear cell acanthoma, and it's just a really fun pathology, and it's nice to know that it's benign. Inkjet lenticles, they can be a little confusing. These are darker, but they do look like you just took ink and kind of threw it on the patient. And so when you don't want to be, you know, you don't want to biopsy someone's forehead for an inkjet lenticle just because it happens to be a little dark, you have to remember it follows that pattern. You get used to it. You see a lot of them on the patient. You're not going to go scraping every inkjet lenticle off unless the patient sometimes is nervous because it's dark and it's isolated. And if it's an isolated dark lesion on a face, you know, sometimes you are going to end up biopsying like we did for this patient. And then the pathologist is going to do a lot of stains to prove that it's totally benign. Here's another example, and you start to see they all look similar. You took the ink, you splattered it on the patient. It doesn't have gray dots granules. It doesn't really have asymmetry. It just looks like an ink splatter. And those are the inkjet lenticles. Again, another example. And lichen planocyte keratosis can also look peppered, not just pink inflammation. It can have brown. And so sometimes it becomes really challenging to differentiate from, let's say, superficial melanoma. But again, look at this lesion. It's got like crust. It has stuff on it. So it makes you think this doesn't really look like a melanocytic lesion. And then the gray dots granules, they're a little larger. So, but if you see the crust and you see the ridges or you see features that are reminiscent of a SEBK, then you know that's just a benign SEBK undergoing regression. And that's a lichen planus-like keratosis. And here you can really appreciate that, yes, there's diffuse granularity, but there are other features consistent with a seborrheic keratosis, like in this one, ridges. But if you're not sure, and often these are inflamed lesions and the patient doesn't like it, then you're going to biopsy it like we did with this lesion, and you're going to see the papillary fibrosis and melanophages and telangiectasias because that's what you see with lichen planus-like keratosis. And then this is a beautiful hemangioma. So you have those beautiful lacuna and oval structures, and you're all thinking, well, I don't need dermoscopy to diagnose this. And it's true, but sometimes when they get irritated or they bleed, or you see like kind of, you know, when you see hemolyzed blood and it's dark or black, then you're not sure. So you have to get used to looking at lacuna so that when it's less obvious, you're still going to know that this is benign and that it doesn't need to be biopsied. And then angiokeratomas actually think can be very confusing, and patients often do come in concerned about them. Why? Because they're black purple. So those don't look so benign, except they have lacuna, and the lacuna are purple. And then the Europeans a few years back went ahead and sort of went through all the various structures of angiokeratomas. And when someone makes an effort to do that, I'm going to present it because I think that's pretty neat. And so you'll see not just the lacuna, you'll see like a whitish veil and erythema and peripheral erythema. And you'll even sometimes see what looks like a little bit of, you know, pigment. And so that's kind of neat. And this is pretty specific and sensitive. So if it's a confusing lesion, then you start to remember some of those features. But you can see, like, these are lacuna. They're sort of purplish red in color, and that's benign. But you see peripheral fine network, too, and you start to appreciate that there's a whitish veil, and you see that there's, you know, that they were really paying attention to a lot of these very granular details on these lesions and getting very excited. So dark oval structures and peripheral erythema and whitish veil, but ultimately just pay attention to the lacuna and you know you're looking at a benign lesion. But it's nice to know there are other features that can remind you that this is an angiokeratoma. I think sebaceous hyperplasias are really clinical diagnoses, but I do believe that people sometimes get confused, especially if they get irritated and they start ruling out basal cell. And so that's why it's still important to know that they have these crowning of vessels and what looks like little popcorn
or white lobular structures. And so then when you're not sure, you see the serpentine vessels and the white lobular structures, and you know that you're dealing with sebaceous hyperplasia, and you remind yourself of the more obvious lesions so that when they're less obvious, you're still gonna get it right. And this is another example of sebaceous hyperplasia, which in this case, I think was still a clinical diagnosis, but it's nice to be able to see things dermoscopically. And that's it, so thank you. And I think we have time for some Q&A, and if we have a little extra time, I always have like a ton of unknowns.
We do already have some questions that came through the app. And then if y'all have any live questions too, just come to me and I'll bring the mic to you. So the first is, how do you approach a patient who has a lot of moles that have concerning features?
That's a very good question that I think I address in the advanced dermoscopy lecture, but I can definitely speak to that. Things that you look for with patients that have large atypical moles is not necessarily the large atypical mole. Sometimes you look for what's known as the ugly duckling, and the ugly duckling isn't necessarily the darkest or most atypical, but it's the lesion, like for example, earlier when I spoke about the amelanotic melanoma, that was a patient that had a lot of large atypical moles, but his little pink macule that had brown, you know, amorphous brown with red dots, that was the biopsy. And every other mole resembled its neighbor, maybe had, you know, there are atypical features to moles that are benign, like the fried egg. I don't only use those features because I think those are clinical features. I also look at the dermoscopy and I try to remember I'm looking at the periphery of the lesion, I'm looking at the overall asymmetry of the lesion, am I looking at something that's elevated, am I looking at something that's flat, and then I'm fine. Then I know that I'm dealing with a benign mole, even if it's very large and atypical. So often those are not the ones that end up getting biopsied.
Great, thank you. Another question that came through, it's a popular question, which dermatoscope do you use? And recommend?
So I actually use different company scopes in my practice. So I really like the 3Gen scopes for taking pictures. I think that the 3Gen dual, it's like the DermLight 3, or now they make a DermLight 4. They do a good job with, for example, if you're looking at actinic keratoses on a face, you'll see these rosette patterns. Those are the only scopes you're going to see them with. Why? I'm not sure. What I use in my hand when I'm looking at patients, I actually used the Heine dermatoscope. Why? Because it has such a large field of view, but I'm going to know that if I think it's a pigmented AK, and I'm not sure there are rosettes, my Heine is actually not gonna catch the rosettes. I might grab a 3Gen scope and make sure that there are rosettes. So I use different scopes for different things, and I really like the 3Gen for images better than the Heine scope, but I like the Heine scope because of the large field of view when I'm looking dermoscopically. So not committed to any one scope. You have to find what works for you, right? But all the scopes I use have contact, non-contact, polarized, non-polarized, and I try my best to remember to toggle when I'm looking at different features. So.
Great, thank you. Another question. Any other resources you would advise for more learning?
There are, you know, when I started dermoscopy back in the, quite some time ago now, there were almost no resources other than a few very detailed, painful to go through for me, and some people love them, textbooks. Now, there's, you know, you have so many resources if you're looking for dermoscopy. It's almost like, I think, inundating. But it's important to remember the basics. Getting a textbook that makes sense to you, that sort of speaks to the way you like to learn, And I still think that's important because you could get online, you can go, I know a lot of people like to use like Visual DX or other apps or DermNet, that's the company from New Zealand and things like that. But it may not, you know, that's just showing you bits and pieces, but it's not giving you a methodology that you can start with that then you can go on to all the various apps and various, you know, online resources. So it's good to still get to the basic and come up with, this is the one that speaks to me. I'm going to use this as my basic guidebook. And then from here, I can go on to all the resources. So that's my recommendation.
This may be a little bit of a repeat question, but I do think it's a good question. For a new PA starting in practice, or a new resident, or a new nurse practitioner, what dermatoscope would you recommend for someone just starting off?
One that you can afford. but, you know, some are a little more expensive than others. I still, if you can splurge, try to get at least one that has both the contact and non-contact. I know, for example, 3Gen makes like a DermLite 1. I worked with the residents for years using DermLite 1, and I kind of felt almost like, I'm so sorry because you're not going to see what I see, and you don't want to miss things. So grade it up a little. Don't go for the absolute bottom of the barrel, but you want to make sure it has kind of both features. But they've gotten, there are now more scopes that have gotten less expensive that do have both polarized and non-polarized, and you don't want to do the one that just hooks on to your iPhone and is like, you know, a glorified loop. You want to have the features of dermoscopy because it's important when you're doing these exams, and frankly, it's going to be really hard to capture it with you know, those like very small scopes that you can just attach to an iPhone. They're not there yet. So,
how do you differentiate a sebaceous hyperplasia from a sebaceous carcinoma on dermoscopy? Or is it more clinical?
So definitely on dermoscopy, I think it's much harder clinically. I actually, in my advanced talk, have a slide that exactly looks at those two features. I think that's a more advanced thing. But it's, and in that slide, bring it back to basics. Is the vessel crossing the midline? Is there a blue ovoid nest or some other feature? Are the vessels behaving and they're crowning the lesion? Is this really these white globules, or am I looking at something now that's eroded and things are sort of going into the entire lesion? And sebaceous carcinomas are not going to look like sebaceous hyperplasia. The vessels are going across the midline, there's going to be erosion, there's going to be other features. And in the slide that I show, it's basically out of 20 years, I found one basal cell that finally looked like sebaceous hyperplasia, and that one had a blue ovoid nest, and the vessels crossed the midline, and it misbehaved. It wasn't crowning of vessels holding these white globules. So.
Where can we find your Keller wheel approach?
Oh, online. You can get it on Amazon or many other, yeah. It's one textbook approach. I'm a lumper, not a splitter. So it's a lumper approach. It's biopsy or don't biopsy.
It's all the questions that I had that came through the app. Does anyone have any questions here? And I'll run the mic over to you.
So if we have extra time.
Yeah, we have till 2, I believe we have till 2, is it 2:45 or is it 2:30? No, 2:30.
Yeah, we only have about 15 minutes. I literally, even before the talk, slimmed it down even more because I'm told, wow, I have like 150 slides. And so, but we have extra time. I have unknowns. So here we go. Let's have some fun. I'm always going to have material, that's for sure. So this is the patient that we already looked at with the blue-gray dots granules, but I like to take it a little more granular. So here's a flat lesion. It was kind of dark brown. It had none of the A, B, C, D, E's of melanoma, but what it did have, it had multiple colors, right? Because it had some blue-gray dots granules. And so then I have, okay, well, what can this be? Can it be a melanoma, or is it a basal cell, or maybe it's, you know, something irritated like a lichen planusite keratosis, or is this just a regular melanocytic nevus, or is it a blue nevus? Like, what am I dealing with? And then you go back and you say, wait a minute, like, this is not a blue nevus, it's not homogeneous, this is not really irritated or irritating the patient, and even know it was there. And I'm seeing these blue dots granules, and I'm seeing what looks like melanocytic pattern, and I'm like, wait a minute, this is, I know it's not a large melanocytic lesion, I know it's not a basal cell, it's not a blue nevus, is this irritated like LPLK, or am I dealing with an early melanoma? And there's no reason to think that it's inflamed, so you're dealing with a malignancy, it's not benign. And it's the granules around follicular openings, because this is on a face, that makes you think of a melanoma. And here's another example of a lesion with gray dots granules on a face, and that's around follicular openings, and so that's, again, melanoma. And then here's another example. So often you think that if something is isolated and pigmented and on a face, that's a melanoma until proven otherwise. I can give many examples where it's not melanoma, but certainly you have to be really cautious. And when you start to see this like darkening around follicular openings, you have to worry that this is irregular and that it could be melanoma. And these are all examples of very early melanoma. And you see these gray dots, granules around follicular openings. And so that again is another example of a facial melanoma. And here you see irregular gray brown pigment. And again, that's another example of a melanoma on the face, early lesion, or I guess this one was AIEMP, but I thought it was melanoma. And these are those rosettes that you'll only see with the 3-gen scope. And so not every pigmented lesion is melanoma. You can also have pigmented AK. And yes, they can have gray dots granules also. So you don't get the patient hysterical telling them you think it's a melanoma in situ when it's a pigmented AK. And so it's important to be able to differentiate. But at the end of the day, most pigmented AKs in my practice, and I'm non-cutting, I end up cutting them because it is hard sometimes to be certain that it's not an early melanoma. So if it's pigmented AK, it's often getting a cutting biopsy. And here again, you see gray dots granules around follicular openings, but what else do you see? So lichen planus-like keratosis, ridge formation, this is benign. That's an LPLK. And then what do I have here? Oh yeah, another nice example. Gray dots granules, peppering, but a moth-eaten border, and that's another LPLK. And here again, you have these, and you start to see that with LPLKs, the granularity is kind of large, but you don't want to make a diagnosis just saying, well, these are large granules and these are small. No, you want to make sure that you're also seeing other features of a benign lesion, like a fingerprint pattern, when you start to get, you know, confident and say, I'm not going to biopsy this because the patient actually doesn't want this off, even though it's inflamed. And so that's an LPLK. And here again, this is an isolated brown lesion on a face. So you're gonna, if you go by that clinical, that woman is definitely getting a biopsy. But who's biopsying that lesion? That's like a really pretty sebK. Okay, so flat, brown in color, and, you know, oops, sorry. So what do we have? Well, yes, we have malignancies and we have benign. And so we start to look at what are the possibilities, and here's the lesion again. And what do we see? We see fingerprint pattern. We see moth-eaten border, milia-like cyst, Seb K, isolated brown lesion on a face. Here's another isolated brown lesion on a face. And what do we see? Ridge formation, moth-eaten border. And here's another isolated brown lesion on a face. So what are we dealing with? It's flat, it's brown, but there's actually multiple colors. And then we look up close, and it's dark around follicular openings. So what can it be? Well, we know it's not a seb. We know it's not a basal. Doesn't really look like a homogeneous blue. Okay, so we're either dealing with LPLK or melanoma. And we know that often if these are irritated, we're going to take them off. But is it an LPLK? Is it a melanoma? Well, did I see ridges? Did I see moth-eaten border? Like, well, I'm seeing a circle within a circle. I'm seeing darkening around follicular openings. That's really concerning for melanoma on the face. Lentigo maligna, this is more of an advanced topic. But in my unknowns, I think it's still important, so I like to put it in the unknowns. This is called an annular granular pattern, and again, that's a melanoma. Early, MMIS, but that's not benign, and that's not LPLK. Lentigo malignas can be very challenging. Often they're caught, even though they're technically lentigo malignas very early, they're caught like really large. And now this poor patient has to have like a really obnoxious surgery to remove it, and that's very life-altering. So we really do want to get really good at noticing when pigment is getting a little darker around follicular openings so we can catch these as early and as subtle as possible so that we can avoid such a large surgery that can be very, like, from a morbidity, forget, like, mortality, they're going to do fine, but morbidity, they're going to be quite miserable. And so lentigo malignas, they can be either on the body or on the face. Of course, extrafacial lentigo maligna, not many people are catching them at that stage. They're not as scary, you know, because, yes, they're lentigo maligna, they're in the family of melanoma, but these are much less aggressive. But they will have the same features that you see on the face. You'll also see on the body with extrafacial lentigo maligna. An advanced topic, but we're going through unknowns, and this is, I think, still an important topic. And so you'll see the circle within a circle, rhomboidal structures, darkening around follicular openings, and that's malignant. And sometimes, you know, the differential is going to have LPLK or pigmented AK. So here's an example of a lentigo maligna, very subtle lesion, but it looks asymmetric, and you start to see the features of melanoma. So you start thinking, well, what's going on here? Well, it's asymmetric, and it's isolated, and it's brown, and it doesn't have features of something that's benign. This could be a lentigo maligna, but these are not going to be so easy to convince a patient to do a large biopsy of this pigmented lesion. So in my practice, I'll use other modalities, like I'll do smart sticker. I'll take a confocal microscope and do a non-cutting biopsy. But if you're using dermoscopy, you do see on this patient that it's asymmetric. There's nothing about this that makes you think, oh, this is a lentigo, of course. And so that's where you just have to remember that these lentigo malignas can be really subtle, and you want to catch them as early as possible because of the amount of skin on the face that has to be removed, of course. And here's another example, but this is a lentigo. So moth-eaten borders, look at how much more uniform it is. Fingerprint pattern, you're seeing benign. Don't think it's a lentigo maligna, and don't do an obnoxious large biopsy. And then if you're not sure, you have additional tools that you can use that will help you make the diagnosis. And then you can look for things like, especially with early lesions, is this overall symmetric or asymmetric? Am I dealing with some asymmetry? Is there streaking at the edges? Or with the early pigmented SCC, which we'll go over during the skin of color dermoscopy, am I seeing like this smudging and this dot pattern? Or am I looking at a lentigo or a junctional nevus and everything looks nice and uniform? Again, lentigo maligna, very asymmetric. Very early lentigo maligna, extrafacial on the body. And you see a lot of this asymmetry. It doesn't really match a benign pattern. It doesn't have fingerprints. It doesn't. And then the other thing that we discovered with extrafacial lentigo maligna is something called this angular line pattern. So when you start to see these little dark lines that are sort of forming angles, that's actually now becoming a very specific feature for extrafacial lentigo maligna. And now we have various articles, and this one I think is a little more obvious. Like you see that there's a gray in it, and there's asymmetry and these random dots. And so you start to think, wait a minute, look how small this lesion is. Like, I'm pretty confident I need to remove this. I'm not leaving it behind. And here again, this one I think a bit more obvious because you see a little bit of the gray dots granules, but these are all early lesions, all in situ, but asymmetric nonetheless. And here's another example. Now you're starting to see gray dots granules, but this was still considered by the pathologist lentigo maligna, and it's on another part of the body, so extrafacial. And I've spoken to many dermatologists, and I say, have you ever biopsied an extrafacial lentigo maligna? And the answer is no. So it is still not an easy thing to catch, but if you start looking for these patterns, you're gonna catch them that early, and why not, right? And so here's just a nice example. Then after this, I'll give everybody a break because I want you guys to be able to actually then start from scratch with skin of color. But this is a nice example where I think these lesions look pretty similar, but you start to look dermoscopically and you see that there's, you know, something that's flat and pale and lots of colors. And is it malignant, is it benign? And what pattern does it fall under? And this falls under blue ovoid nests and crystalline and globular-like structures. And so that's more consistent with a basal cell, superficial. And then this lesion has gray dots, granules, asymmetry. And so, you know, still gonna fall under flat and pale brown, but lots of colors, so you have to think early malignancy, and this falls under an early melanoma. And then I think we're probably out of time.
Yeah, we have one question.
Okay.
The question that came through had stated, you mentioned using Smart Sticker. Do you use any other non-invasive tools for facial pigmented lesions?
Yes, so I'm using reflectance confocal microscopy, which is covered by insurance as a non-cutting biopsy. So, and basically it has the same reimbursement as a cutting biopsy. So that's definitely a nice option, especially if you're not sure if something is malignant. And then also there are newer technologies coming out. One that I think will be soon commercially available in the US, which is there's optical coherence tomography, and now there's LCOCT and other where you're looking three-dimensionally, and there's smaller probe sizes. So if you can't get the large RCM probe on, there's gonna be very soon newer technologies with smaller probes as well. And so you can diagnose without cutting a patient in most locations now on the body.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Markowitz.
My pleasure.